touchdown. Taylor Gabriel will run into the end zone. And on second and goal, they're going to throw the fade. And there's Jones. And good luck trying to stop that. Ryan fires, and that is caught for a touchdown by Austin Hooper. Matt Ryan throws his fourth touchdown pass of the night.
Matt Ryan making it look easy on Thursday night. Football 43-28. Atlanta Falcons take care of business in the NFC South. And to me, just another week where Matt Ryan put another little part of his MVP candidacy on display for everyone to watch. He was on fire tonight.
Yeah, they made it look easy. They actually made it look easier than the final score would suggest. They blew some opportunities in the first half, including my whipping boy, Josh Perkins, a tight end for the Falcons, who dropped an easy touchdown. It wasn't a perfect throw, but tight ends should make that play.
Falcons, why you got to focus on that? This is a perfect game for them, just about.
Because this could have been easily just like that September game from 2 years ago when they scored 56 points. They could have flirted with 60 in this game.
By the way, that's Chris Wesseling, the mailman. Didn't even introduce him. He's so famous, he doesn't really need an introduction. But this is our Week 9 preview show, of course, and we're going to get to Dan Hansis, Mark Sessler, in just a few minutes to go through all the Week 9 games. But this team, the Falcons, they pick up 20 yards, to me, easier than any team I've seen in a while. It's just like 20-yard chunks, 20-yard chunks. He makes it look so simple, the anticipation, the accuracy. He's just feeling it right now. And you pointed out to me an NFL research note. They are averaging more yards per play right now, the Falcons, than any team since, what, the 99 Falcons?
2000 Rams, the greatest show
on turf. The 2001 Rams. That's insane.
2000 Rams, greatest show on turf. That's more than the 2007 Patriots, more than the 2013 Broncos. This is an explosive, dynamic offense, and they didn't even have Tevin Coleman, who had been the biggest mismatch of any running back in the league in the passing game this year.
But they did have Austin Hooper, who I think it might need to stay as the starter when Jacob Tammy comes back. Or either way, they have two good tight end options there. They have Taylor Gabriel, who's just so fast when they use him. You know, he's too small to touch the ball 10 times a game, but he's a weapon.
Well, he's one of the waiver pickups of the year. And it's to the credit of Kyle Shanahan and Matt Ryan that they use so many different guys and play to their strengths in a limited role. That trio of tight ends is on pace for 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns. It's like a Tony Gonzalez season.
And Julio Jones explained after the game kind of how hard this offense is to cover. He basically said, they're double covering me. They're sending all sorts of coverage at him throughout the first half. And the Falcons are going up and down the field. So the first drive of the second half, the Bucs made a little bit of an adjustment. They tried to do some other things, get creative. Basically, he had Hargraves in single coverage, so he just catches three or four passes right on Hargraves, goes right down the field, looked like an adult playing against a kid on the touchdown, and he ends up with a relatively quiet 8 for 111. That's just what he does.
And he'll end up with about 30 fewer receptions this year and almost the same amount of yards because he's a more efficient player, and he's the engine that makes the best offense in the NFL go.
6-3 now for the Falcons. I don't think this team is going to fade. I don't think there's going to be an NFC South race. I don't think the Falcons let the Saints or Panthers get back into it. Forget the Bucs. I know they're only 3-5, but they're one of the worst teams in the league. And I think what you really saw in this game, one of the biggest differences was the pass rush, that the Falcons have a pass rush, and the Bucs absolutely do not. Matt Ryan felt no pressure, but Adrian Claiborne, Vic Beasley, both playing pretty well.
Yeah, I made a joking comment that Adrian Claiborne is a defensive player of the year candidate. He's not that, and he might not make the Pro Bowl, but this is easily his best season, and he's been getting in quarterbacks' faces for a month now.
We've said it here, and I think Collinsworth had a good point that you could see this defense playing a lot better by the end of the season. They're not a good defense now, but you can see the parts that they have. They have some talent that I think they could come together and play. You could see maybe week 15 playoff. You could see them putting together four or five good weeks where they're a slightly above average defense, and that's enough for this team to maybe go to the Super Bowl.
There's a weird dichotomy at play with them because they already have more sacks than all of last season, but they have also given up more passing touchdowns than all of last season. And Desmond Trufant, by far their best cornerback, left this game with a shoulder injury and never returned.
Well, quickly, we don't want to spend too much time on this game. Jameis Winston left with a knee injury late. It sounded like after the game he was fine. That's what he told reporters, and he was walking around talking to everyone. This, to me, was the typical Jameis Winston performance of the year. I think if you watch the game, you saw the talent. You saw the old man, crafty, kind of crazy plays. You saw him being a little reckless with his body and taking a huge hit at the goal line, and you saw just, you know, that he's not good enough to carry a lousy franchise. He's good, but, it's just not good enough.
You also saw a Mike Evans, whom even Desmond Trufant couldn't cover. And once he left, the Falcons cornerbacks had no chance. Mike Evans is having a Pro Bowl year, borderline All-Pro.
Well, the one-handed catch by Evans on the sideline before he took a shot was maybe the catch of the year.
Best one I've seen.
A one-handed catch, and then he just got absolutely blasted right under the chin. I mean, Winston took one under the chin and on his back on a play that he switched to his left hand. I think they are who we thought they were, Winston and Evans. It's just a bad team.
Yeah, they don't surround them with good players. Back to the Falcons before we sign off. I think this team is here to stay. They're a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
Agree.
And they're one of the top five teams to watch as far as excitement. And they close out the season after the bye week with 4 of 6 home games, too.
You didn't say it, so I'll say it. I'm out of my chair getting excited. The press is so fired up about the Falcons. Fun team, even though it wasn't that fun a game. They provided some entertainment. Hopefully, we will do the same. Let's go to Dan and preview the Week 9 games.
The Around the NFL podcast has majority ownership in the Portland Riverhawks.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Came up with a great new term before the show today. It was kind of like a little groupthink when you really get like banged in a big spot. You just got Wested.
I mean, specifically banged by, verbally by West.
Yeah, an individual, Chris Wessling. Oh, you just got Wested.
But I think it could apply even if West isn't involved.
Like, well, if it carries,
if someone just stops you cold in a big spot, you got Wested.
Yeah. Well, as somebody that brought back the Dean screen, I could tell you it's not easy to bring things back or create things to be a creator. But I think this one has the legs.
Where's the derivation of this?
What do you mean?
How did it start?
I don't know.
Well, it's
how does anything start?
We were just chatting, but I think it needs a sort of primary powder keg moment where almost everyone involved, the whole nation, would say, this thing involved Wes, and then it becomes a verb and it changes.
Well, how about
from
this?
There. Yeah.
Super Bowl 51, Patriots up 27 or down 27-25. They're driving down the field. Mm-hmm. Wes runs out on the field completely nude, punches Tom Brady in the face, knocks him out of the game. Patriots lose because Jake Brisket fails. And what happens?
Ooh, slice me off a piece of that.
What's the only way you can look at things afterwards? You just got Wested.
It's a plausible scenario.
I love it. And I think, Dan, you would need to, you'd need to tweet that out, and then it just gets retweeted by thousands.
We're only halfway there once the knockout happens.
Yeah.
You were definitely right about that on the end-around.
Yeah, that's an end-around post for sure. This is the late Thursday edition of the Around the NFL podcast, sponsored by Mr. Flames Economic Class in the Hague, the Netherlands.
Still there.
Thought maybe he moved his classroom of gentle giants, but he has not. Congratulations to the Chicago Cubs, who won the World Series in 7 games.
Yesterday. What a series.
Yes, the Cubs, who came back from a 3-1 deficit.
Play ball!
And forced the game 7, and then won that game 7.
Strike!
But why do we need the sound effects to translate what's happening here?
For once, I want a shadowy league figure to tell us we can't use some sound drop.
You guys have bad memories. You don't
Strike
remember?
Strike 3, you're out!
Yes. I remember it.
Oh, sorry, guys.
Best game 7 you've ever seen?
It's a great one. I would put it right up there, probably, given all the history involved.
For baseball specifically, I would say yes.
I would. And I feel bad for all those Indians fans, including Tom Blair, who works downstairs, does a great job for us. came to work with a stiff upper lip, but him and millions of other Indians fans. Do they have millions of fans? Mark, you tell us. You're the Cleveland resident.
They've got 10.
Well, I've sensed all along that I've not been allowed to participate in this this baseball aspect, because it's like Mark doesn't like baseball, so even though this lifelong Cleveland fan is sitting 3 feet from Tom Blair, all comments will be pointed specifically at Tom Blair about
the
Indians.
Saying that you
but you always said you're a Browns fan, you're not a
I will say this, I root hardcore for the city of Cleveland. There, I have no other loyalty than the Cleveland Browns, and I watched that city. I watched Craig Elo against Jordan. I watched both Indian series that they lost in the 90s. I rooted hard for them because of the city. That said, it's an impossible fix to go up against the Cubs and not realize that you are going, not the villain role. It did play out a little bit on Twitter, and I watched part of this at a restaurant in L.A., and it was unbelievable.
As any diehard would.
Well, L.A. is just absolutely a bandwagon jumping town, number one, but the whole place was like 98% Cubs, but I get
it. It's representative of the country.
I think so, too. I get it. It was not an easy PR angle for the Indians, and congratulations to Cubs fans. There are a lot of loyal Cubs fans in our office, too, at least today.
I honestly thought that you were just Brown-specific, I remember you rooting for the Cavs, but it wasn't
I was with you during
that.
Actually,
like, invested in it. And well, the Indians, because usually have kind of a
I may not have telecast thing. My feelings strong enough, you know, at the multiple Cavs games we went to, because it meant a lot for that city to get the monkey off its back. And now they're treated as if they are, you know, sports version of the New England Patriots, where too much success for the city of Cleveland. Go back. Go be put back in your place now.
To those who say that you don't know baseball, there's Twitter evidence that your sources discovered Chris Bryant. When he was still in the minor leagues, and you were all over that. You reported that how they were going to handle his promotion, how he was going to do once he got to the Cubs. I feel like Mark put his stamp on the Chris Bryant story.
That all sounds totally made up.
No, it's out there.
Well, actually, tweeted. I sent this to you last night in a text.
I know.
Dan has just gone a complete blackout of anything Mark Sessler related to. But this was a fortune telling tweet from 2014 about Chris Bryant.
I can't let society think that Mark's in on baseball. I can't allow it.
I know, it's what I'm saying. It's a campaign of yours to shut me out of this experience, and I've not said anything, but I have certainly noticed it.
All right. Okay.
And it is a very odd stance for you to be taking, because it's a sport that you want people to embrace, and yet you are shutting close friends out of the experience. It feels slightly possessive and slightly bizarre.
Okay. I mean, that's fair criticism. But
is it?
If you're going to be in, I want you all the way in.
Well, I won't do that.
Okay. All right. Today's edition of the event, you just heard at the top of the show, the recap from the scientists of the Atlanta Falcons, Tampa Bay Buccaneers game, which is now in the books. But we still have a bunch of games to talk to. Ten games to talk about, including Monday Night Affair. So, so much to get to, Greg. So much.
Big show.
So much football to get into. So why don't we start with the 1 p.m. games. And the first game we'll talk about here, the Detroit Lions traveling to Minnesota to face the Vikings. And, of course, we have some news to get to off the top involving the Vikings and their offensive coordinator, Norv Turner. Oh. You know, we all decided that this was a group thing.
What was that?
Wait, what was that? I didn't hear it.
Team of ATL?
That's... Come on. Grow up.
What was that?
That you're saying who should grow up? Sydney? She made that?
I don't think Sydney did that on her own.
Sydney, you're a truthful person. Who provided the verbalization for the last part of the hell part of that? I want you to tell the truth.
Listen, I really like my job.
Tell the truth.
I don't actually know his name.
Yeah, he doesn't know. She doesn't know. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. Norv Turner. Who knows who did it? Norv Turner has resigned as offensive coordinator of the Vikings. A sudden resignation, one that no one saw coming. And, Greg, what do you make of this? What are you hearing? Read between the tea leaves for us with this resignation.
I'm not hearing anything.
Okay. NFL podcast insider.
It sounded like Norv Turner didn't like the direction he was getting from his boss, and he respects Mike Zimmer, but he didn't want to continue to coach his offense with Zimmer apparently having some ideas, having some restrictions, wanting him to do things a certain way. He just couldn't agree. You get out. It's a bad sign.
I think
there's
another element to this, too, in that this trade for Sam Bradford, and listen, I have something to talk to you about on Team of ATL next week. We'll get to it then. But there is something to be said that the deal was largely pushed for by Pat Shurmur, who was at the time the quarterback's coach and now is the play caller. And that
what, this is a palace coup?
I'm just saying that Shurmur and Bradford, their careers have been linked for many years. And I wonder if Turner felt either that he was not, I don't know if it's a power issue, but there was a lot going on here besides Norv Turner just running the offense without any sort of checks and balances.
There was a report on NFL Network. People thought going into the year this was going to be Norv Turner's last season in Minnesota.
Tea leaves.
For some of these philosophical differences, they brought in Shurmur and Tony Sperano, two former head coaches, into the staff this year. So there was something bubbling up even before.
All right.
But if it were truly toxic, I mean, Scott Turner, who remains the quarterback's coach, is still on the team. So it tells you that, and I do believe that there is respect between Zimmer and Norv Turner. It's not like a burn down the house type thing. I think he wanted out.
Well, here's the thing. Vikings have played 7 games. They have 11 touchdowns on offense, so they got to get better. We'll see if they can against the Detroit Lions, who aren't world beaters on defense. And the best news for the Vikings after 2 straight losses, number one, they're still 5-2, which is a very good position to be in. But number two, Wes, their home field advantage has been excellent so far. They feel like they're in a good spot here.
It's not a small factor. I think a lot of people who have followed football for years believe that offensive line play in particular struggles on the road versus at home because you can hear the snap count, you can brace for the edge rushers coming at you. And I think this is a welcome trip home for that Vikings offensive line that has really, you know, given up so much pressure on the road the last 2 weeks.
I mean, 11 sacks for Bradford over the last 2 weeks. You know, they signed Armonte Bryan, and he actually been playing pretty well for the Lions, and he was part of their pass rush. He's out, suspended. Kerry Hyder's he's gotten pressure as well, but it's not the Eagles, and
the worst defense in football. I mean, I would put the Browns lower, but the Lions have been in the mix for the least effective. So if ever you were going to have a game to protect him well, this would be it, because your boy, Sydney, our producer, Ziggy Ansah, I mean, you put some sandwiches on Ziggy Ansah getting a lot of sacks, and that's not happening.
He might have less sacks than you owe sandwiches by the end of the season.
What a sad, sad day.
Yeah.
He is healthy again, apparently. He's playing. So.
Does this team need to start lining up an extra tackle and going multiple 2 or 3 tight end sets to even keep this offense afloat?
Yep. Yes. I think you need to put a tight end out there. You need to chip block. You definitely need help for that tackle.
I mean, this is obviously not a must-win team or game for a 5-2 team, but
I think it is.
They got to win this game.
I think it is, to be honest.
You stop the snowball here because there's a lot of bad vibes around the team right now, and you're in a good spot. The Lions are a nice, frisky team, but they're not a great team. You got to win this ballgame.
You've got the Redskins, Cardinals, Lions, and Cowboys coming up next for Minnesota. 3 weeks ago, we would have thought you can go 3-1 down that stretch with the team we were seeing. It's hard to pick what games they're going to win with the way they've been playing.
Let's move on, gentlemen, and talk about the Philadelphia Eagles and New York Giants, an NFC East showdown here between 2 4-3 teams. I think there was a general feeling that the NFC East was going to go right down to the wire, and perhaps it still may, but right now it kind of seems, as things stand, that the Cowboys are little to a lot better than the other three teams, and everyone else is closely packed together. Wes, do you see it that way with the Eagles and Giants?
Yeah, I think they are two similar teams, and I know the Eagles roared out to a strong start, but over the last 4 weeks, they've been outscored by their opponents. And in the last 2 weeks, Carson Wentz is the only quarterback in the NFL not to complete a pass of 15 or more air yards, which is the biggest problem with the Eagles' offense right now. They have no downfield element. The receivers aren't very good. And I know we've given credit to the Eagles because Jim Schwartz, with the same players Chip Kelly had, is basically getting it done and turning out a great defense. But the offense is not. And the only team with fewer big plays this year is the 49ers. So I don't know if this is the Chip imprint that he left these players in Philadelphia that can't make plays.
It's funny because the Niners also have a massive
legacy
issue at wide receiver. And you cannot get through an NFL season with a talent-poor pass-catching crew. And if they masked it to some degree early on, Jordan Matthews played very well in the early part of the year. The game plan against the Cowboys was very clear. We are not going to test the field And the right. Giants' secondary makes that tough.
I think Carson Wentz played well against Dallas. I mean, he executed what they wanted him to do for the most part. They had four or five drops. Aguilar and Dorial Green-Beckham, it's a woeful starting combination. They had to cut Josh Huff because of his arrest this week. He wasn't a huge factor, although he'd been helping on special teams quite a bit. And they have to go against the Giants secondary, which is one of the best in the league. You're trying to find some open guys with Aguilar, Dorial Green-Beckham, and Zach Ertz. By the way,
They're not on the same page.
Zach Ertz, where are you?
I think he's had about 7 or 8 catches the last, you know, 6 weeks or something like that. Going up against Rogers, Cromartie, and Landon Collins, who's
Janoris Jenkins is playing well.
And Janoris Jenkins, like, good night. This is going to be a 10-6 game.
Well, on top of it, you've got a running game where the coach had to come out and clarify for beat writers that Ryan Matthews is still the lead guy this week, coming off a game where he had 8 snaps. He's had 3 or 4 games over the last month where he's had around 8 or 11 snaps, and Darren Sproles is dominating playing time.
Running game's not a problem for them.
They just have three or four guys, though.
They've been running the ball pretty well. Giants haven't had over 45 yards rushing in 3 weeks as a team. That's hard to do. As a team, they haven't topped 45 yards.
What about your boy, though, Odell Beckham? From week 9 to the end of the year, over his career, there is no better receiver in the league from week 9 on.
It is his time, but you need the quarterback and the play caller to get you the ball.
And how's his hip? Is that a real issue to track going forward? Hey, I know this this game is evenly matched, 10-6. I like the sound of that, Greg. Not bad. But I don't like this matchup at all for the Eagles. I think they will rue the day they let that Dallas game get away from them. I think it could change the complexion of their entire season. And I don't like them going on the road here where their offense isn't playing that well and they're not going to be able to challenge downfield. And I think, I don't know, but I think the Giants are eventually going to start playing better on offense. And I see it happening here. And I'm so confident, in fact, Chris Wessling, so confident that the Meadowlands, that's where you'll find my lock.
You gonna lock it up?
Of the week. Lock it up, baby. Seal it up. Throw away the key. Well, it's not a key. It's one of those turn things. Throw away the combination. Don't need to get in there. It's already locked up.
Dan really selling it.
I mean, you sounded stunningly like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, a little bit.
It was a very...
good 70s ref. I knew it. I got it.
Eagles are done for the year.
Why?
Because Dan just locked it up, first of all, and you do not want to be the team that's ruining the day.
What?
They're ruining the day.
Well, never want to rue the day.
Right. Well, we picked this game, by the way, in our NFL Pick'em show, which everyone should watch.
I'll read the copy here,
Greg. On Saturday. What time?
I won't let you see the copy. NFL Network, 8:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 1:30 a.m. when you're drunk. Nice and sauce.
Well, that's all Eastern if you're on the Pacific Coast like us. You know, back it up 3 hours.
And if you're in the U.K. or elsewhere overseas, you bang.
Well, I already know what our picks are for this game, and I got a hero pick on the old Eagles.
Well, you better hope that happens, Greg. They play the Falcons, Seahawks, Packers, and Bengals after this.
So rue the day.
This season.
You're going to rue the day, baby. All right, let's move on.
Schedule's tough.
Next up, my New York Jets, who have won 2 in a row. You know, I sneaky, I'm not going to say I bought back in, but hope is still in the building at Hansus Manor here in Culver
City. Don't do it.
I know. I shouldn't, Wes. I can't control myself. They're 3-5.
A win over the Browns swayed you that heavily.
Back-to-back wins. Listen, I am a fan that is always hopeful.
Yeah.
Optimistic fan. Like it or not, that's just who I am. I wish it wasn't that way. But I look at this schedule, and I say, that's a pulse, baby. There's a gleam, gentlemen, and there's also a pulse. The Jets are 3-5. They go to Miami now to face a Dolphins team that's playing better. I think I rightly made sure they weren't forked because they're a little bit frisky right now. And I honestly think there's a very good chance, all kidding aside, the Dolphins win this game. In fact, I took the Dolphins for our Pick'em show.
Oh!
I do think that the Jets – I don't think the Jets are good. I'm just saying, if they got this win and then they got the Rams at home, 5-5 the bye week, not a crazy thought. But, Greg, I mean, I don't see it.
Are you annoyed at this point that the Dolphins, down on their luck after that ugly Thursday night game, listened to the podcast as they always do?
Always.
They heard that Dan Hansus was not going to fork them, and they thought, you know what? No one else believes in us, but old Danny boy does. Let's start running the ball with Jay Ajayi. Let's start playing hard. Let's do it for Dan. Now they're 3-4. You turn their season around.
It's a weird way to look at things, but I'll take it. I'll take
it. At least you have, you know, one of your defensive stalwarts, Sheldon Richardson, telling the media, I'm the odd man out.
What, you know what, though?
Well, he's right.
He probably shouldn't say it, but
well,
he is. It's
I'm not saying he's wrong. It's just that's
why are you that, trying to trade Sheldon?
This is the mindset you're going into trying to stop a running back that's had 200 yards back to back.
I don't think he'll have 100 yards. I think if the Jets lose, I don't think it will be because they get shredded by J.J. as much as I like the guy.
It was so refreshing last year that the circus was gone when Rex left, that Todd Bowles kept everything under control. There was no drama. And this year the circus is back. You've got Ryan Fitzpatrick going off on people, the Geno Smith factor. You've got Sheldon Richardson calling himself the odd man out. And why are they trying to trade him anyway?
Revis telling a reporter that he's basically washed up.
Yeah, the circus is back in town for the Jets. That's not a good sign.
They need to – the circus is almost a good thing for Maccagnan and Todd Bowles and everyone to distract them from the real problem is that they never develop anyone. This team doesn't have anyone
Anunua.
Homegrown. They got Quincy Anunua. Okay.
Leonard How about Williams?
They have Leonard Williams, but they lose Eric Decker, and it's like the most devastating thing in the world. Fitzpatrick, free agent. Marshall, free agent. Who else we got?
Well, Darrell
Forte,
Revis,
free agent.
Who they did develop.
It's all and brought back. On offense, you have nothing to build around. Your older players, you know, Nick Mangold's not in this game. Muhammad Wilkerson's probably not in this game. They're not giving him what
Ryan
they expected.
Clady, another.
I think part of this is it's easy to say that, and I agree with you. They're built as an older team that's expensive. They got some expensive parts, but you had the what's his name? The iceberg or whatever. What was it called?
The Glacier.
John Idzik, who they came in and wanted to make good with the fans and undo some of the harm that Idzik created in terms of not bringing in players. You overpay Revis to get him back in the building. And it was I thought the trade for Brandon Marshall was inexpensive and good.
Absolutely.
A lot of other things they've done are it's patches with veteran players. You have to develop younger guys, but they're only a year and a half into their regime.
Listen, and we say it all the time. The Jets, I think things would be a lot better off if Ryan Fitzpatrick would have been like the guy he was last year. But once he reverted back to being Ryan Fitzpatrick and then the double trouble hit of Revis going off a cliff, which nobody really saw to this extent, they were done.
He's been fine in the last game and a half since they brought him back because they have a running game, Fitzpatrick.
He's been okay.
But that's what that's what he was last year ultimately. People dropping some interceptions. They don't have Decker. But you give him a little bit of a running game and, you know, he looks pretty good.
If you lose this game, do you want to see Bryce Petty, Dan, or do you still think there's a chance for the playoffs?
No, they need to get to the bye at 5-5-1 or 5-5. They really do.
Okay,
so I would love to see Bryce Petty if they lose one of these next two games.
I am sneaky excited about this game because the winner will have won 3 straight games and feel very good about themselves. Will have come back from the dead, and I love the Jay Ajayi versus the rush defense matchup.
It's a good battle
because if nothing else, the Dolphins kind of said, "Hey, this is who we are now." And no one tries to even run against the Jets. And Jay Ajayi, we kind of throw it off like, oh, yeah, he had 200 yards back-to-back games. That's insane that he's going to be the Yao Ming
of
London.
Well, by the way, you can also throw against the Jets. So there's, you know, there's that.
What are you making a face about?
Such a great game to be excited about.
I'm just saying the Dolphins, especially if they win, I think can feel like, hey, we're in this. We're in the mix.
Yes, anybody could throw against the Jets, but Ryan Tannehill's involved, so that could be negated too. We'll find out. Moving on, another AFC matchup. Here is the Jacksonville Jaguars traveling to Kansas City to face the Chiefs. And, Wes, can you provide me a little bit of insight here? Explain it to me. Why is Alex Smith? Where is Alex Smith? Is Nick Foles the new starter with the Chiefs? What's happening in Kansas City?
I don't understand that. I don't know how you can – the team comes out and says he doesn't have a concussion, but he does have a head injury, and he's not going to play. I mean, either he's concussed or he's not.
They play things safely, and they should be applauded for that. They've done this in the past.
Why not just admit he has a concussion?
Right. And if you're so worried about safety, hey guys, maybe after he goes through the concussion protocol in the middle of last game, hey, maybe don't have him run the read option a few more times and get his head cracked.
Well,
that's how he got hurt the second
time. Some of this
time.
Is on Alex Smith. Slide earlier.
Yeah. He blamed
Unless
himself.
Unless he was already concussed.
For one of them.
Didn't
headed.
Know what he was doing.
Why is he out on the practice field this week, too?
The whole thing is weird.
This is a battle of two franchises that were rebuilt in 2013. One of them is going north, and the other one continues to go south. And I think you can also call it the quarterback coaching bowl. Blake Bortles, his mechanics are a mess for 2 out of 3 years he's been in Jacksonville. They can't fix that. Nick Foles was broken. Broken with the Rams. He comes to Kansas City and plays, puts up a 130 passer rating in relief against Alex Smith. You could tell he was more confident. He was smoother in the pocket. He was more accurate. And Andy Reid deserves some credit for
that. Do you feel the Foles thing specifically is a carryover operation where we could see that from week to week? I wonder if that was a – sometimes reliever, they come in, a backup comes in and just lights up the sky because, you know,
it's a fair question. I don't know the answer to that. I can only tell you that he did look like – he looked like the Nick Foles that we saw at times in Philadelphia under Andy Reid.
He knows this offense.
Not the Nick Foles we saw with the Rams.
He's not taking the job, though. He gives him a vertical game, but he's not taking
it. No, I'm not saying that at all.
Speaking of Andy Reid, a little aside here. The Chiefs have won 15 of 17 dating back to last year. They won a playoff game last year. Is he the most underrated coach of his generation?
Yes. That's a good question, and I think he's certainly a candidate. Another way to look at it is any team in the league that won 15 out of 17 would somehow have some buzz around it. The Chiefs continue to be seen as this also-ran.
Not
that's
in this
barely
studio.
Alive. Well,
we've been talking about them a lot. We all picked them to win.
Maybe we have.
I'm saying this year.
In general, they're ignored. They're just ignored.
Is that more of an Alex Smith thing or more of an Andy Reid thing?
I think it is because I think Alex Smith, and this is not unfair. You look at the team, the way they're built, you have to respect them. But there's also this very clear-cut ceiling because you don't get to the Super Bowl often with average quarterback play. And he's above average, but he's Alex Smith.
They have reached the next level, though, as an organization. When Nick Foles is your starter, last week he comes into the game. Charcandrick West is your running back. There's no Spencer Ware this week. And they're huge favorites. The Colts, they had plenty of time to come back in that game after Foles and West are the two leading guys. And it's like, nope, it doesn't matter. That's the that's Patriots, Seahawks
like
level.
The anti-Jets.
Type stuff. Doesn't matter who's in there. The system's going to beat you. At least bad teams like this.
And they're in third place. They're 5-2 and they're sitting in third place.
Let's move on, guys, and talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Now 6-1 after that exciting overtime win over the Eagles in Sunday Night Football. Now they travel to Cleveland. Downtrodden, heartbroken Cleveland after the Indians' loss. Now they get to watch the 0-8 Browns. And one comment I'll make. Like last week, for instance, I got a hero pick on the Jets. I feel like I've heard a lot, and not just from this room, a lot of people picking the Browns week to week. And the one thing I took out of the Jets game was there's a reason the Browns lose all these games because it is one of the worst defenses you're ever going to see. So for people that are going to say, oh, this is a trap game, to me it goes back to the same thing, Mark, which is the Browns have no ability to close because they don't have the players and maybe they don't have the scheme. The Browns are a mess and people don't seem to look at them that way.
They're a mess on one side of the ball specifically. They're overmanned. They have too many young players. I mean, one reason that a trade for a guy like Jamie Collins – regardless of the fact that New England has shipped out Jamie Collins acting like he's one of the worst football players that ever stepped
on
the face of the earth.
He's like a one-down player now.
But you need some older leadership and some guys that have kind of been there before. That is one of the youngest defenses, and they're taking their lumps. The reason people, I think, were picking Cleveland is because the way that Hugh Jackson is coached from quarterback to quarterback, what he's dealt with, and the fact that you still see serviceable quarterback performances – most week to week, whether it's Cody Kessler or Josh McCown, and their ability as an offense to go through all those variations, and the fact that you get Corey Coleman back, and the fact that the reason the Browns were dominating the Jets in the first half was because Terrell Pryor was absolutely unstoppable, and there aren't many cornerbacks that can shut him down. All that is present so they can stay in some of these games, but by any way you look at it, it's not just their pass defense. Their run defense is an absolute disaster right now after starting stronger than it should have earlier in the year.
Some of the holes last Sunday were outrageous.
You look at this matchup and tell me how you are going to stop Jason Witten, how you're going to stop Cole Beasley. You haven't stopped slot receivers all year or tight ends.
How are you
going to
ever
Dez
get
Bryant.
Past their offensive line? I mean,
their
they
offensive
have no
line,
pass rush whatsoever.
We haven't even mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. This game is not a trap game. This is a game that could be a white out type material for Cleveland where the floor falls out early and the game script, if there is one for the Browns, is blown up by halftime, if not the first quarter.
Elliott's a mortal lock for 150 total yards here. I mean, everything is set up well for him to have a monster game.
Barring them taking him out early and putting Alf Morris in, yes.
Do you have any Brown sources with any idea who's going to start at quarterback?
Do you leave me?
Well, the only – no, I do not personally, but some people that work inside the building in their media limb – have talked more about it being Kessler. I think at this point, with Josh McCown, it could be a Browns coach next year if he wanted, probably. I don't know if it's a bad idea to go with Kessler.
I think the Browns could be frisky if McCown was starting. If McCown was starting, throwing to Pryor and Coleman against the Cowboys secondary, missing Barry Church and Morris Claiborne, I think the Browns can put up some points. Kessler, I know everybody's really high on him, and he's exceeded expectations. Too many three and outs for my liking.
McCown was a big part of the problem last week, too, though, in the second half.
But he can move the ball.
Their whole offense was vertical-based with him on the
field. He started two games this year. Those two games are two of their three highest yardage games. They've gone over 400 yards. But he makes those killer mistakes, and that's why you can't – I wouldn't blame them for playing Cody Kessler. The one thing I've thought about the Browns, I know there's not a lot of talent on defense, and Ray Horton's done a bad – you know, he's – been given a tough spot.
I think so.
Here are, though, his – it's worth pointing out. His finishes in points allowed for the teams that he's coached over the last 4 years. 23rd, 29th, 27th, and then now 30th. So it's been a long time since Ray Horton coached a team that wasn't one of the worst defenses in the league.
Yeah. It's not particularly easy, probably when they were putting the staff together to get a lot of people to sign up to be the defensive
leaves
coordinator.
Tennessee
of a team.
And very similar talent, they get better, though.
Well, he leaves Tennessee because Dick LeBeau is there. That's not an easy place to be a defensive coordinator with the greatest defensive mind hanging over your shoulder every week. But
yeah.
But you're right. There's been development on offense. There's been a sum with certain players on defense. But you look at Dallas, they're developing players. They're the team that's drafting offensive linemen and turning it into the best offensive line in the league. Everyone counted their defense out, and they've been credibly – their effort in the way they've worked week to week has been very impressive
in
Dallas.
You know, over the past 5 years or so, it's always fun to put Jerry Jones near the bottom of any GM list.
Not now.
Just bury him. But if you look at their roster now, it's just frankly not the right way to look at it. Let's move on, guys. An AFC North battle. The Pittsburgh Steelers – who one will assume will have Ben Roethlisberger behind center, travel to Baltimore to face the Ravens. The Ravens, one of the weirder seven-game starts that you'll have, started with three straight wins, including some kind of exciting endings for the victories, a lot of good spirit, and now have lost four in a row. So they are desperate for a win. They really need this. And now they get a Steelers team, Mark, that, yeah, we'll probably see Big Ben. Will he be Big Ben? Will he be able to finish the game if he plays? Some unknowns with this game for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, there were people that thought Big Ben would be out for a while, and if he's back in, it speaks to – you know, how much they need him to become what they are. I mean, 100%.
Well, people being Ben sources that set up a long timeline, and then he beats it.
Well, I have not dealt with that type of injury, so I'm
move,
not going to speculate.
Tea
leaves? Tea leaves?
That's
his move.
Parsing those tea leaves.
That's how we get a call from the Steelers organization. That's how that
maximum
works.
Drama for every Ben Roethlisberger injury.
Right, because it was 2 to 3 weeks when Ian Rappaport was reporting it, and then it was 5 to 6 weeks when other sources.
When Ben Roethlisberger was reporting it.
Right. It's very
now it's back to 2 to 3.
It's similar to the way Connor Orr was getting behind the Panthers because he wanted to be ahead of all the narratives about the media doubted us. Keep pounding.
Keep pounding.
It's the same thing.
Keep pounding.
You know, Ben's trying. He's playing this. He's pulling the strings. Terrell Suggs put it well, Wes. He said, you know, he's not fooling anybody with this stuff. We know we're going to see him on Sunday.
Terrell Suggs has seen this for 12 years, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Ben's move. He does it all the time.
Well, Ben has missed 7 games against the Ravens.
He can milk an injury with the best of them, and then he can come back and put on a show with the best.
And he's going to, because when was the last time we saw Lev Bell, Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, all healthy and humming together? There was only about one game there where you got to see it. Lev Bell is averaging more than 150 yards from scrimmage each and every week. That's outrageous. That's a 2,500-yard type of pace.
It's fantastic.
Even with Landry Jones, he gets 150 yards.
It's fantastic. And Jay Ajayi's first 200-yard game, he wasn't even the best running back on the field because Le'Veon Bell's cuts were insane in that game.
He's
was
healthy.
Silky smooth.
I mean, and also Antonio Brown, outside of – He played well with Landry Jones in there against the Patriots. I think that was the first time he's crossed the 100-yard barrier without Big Ben on the field. I mean, you said it. You need your quarterback in there. There's all this stuff about he's not – I don't know if he's not a tough guy, is that what we're saying? But, I mean, Big Ben is
an
unbelievable
guy.
He's a tough guy. He just makes sure you know it. That's the hook here.
I hear you.
We haven't talked Ravens, which this was a team when we started talking about the season. It was like they were the big mystery team. They could go either way. We can't figure them out. And now here it is week 9. And
I still feel like
we can't figure them out. They haven't had any continuity. They change offensive coordinators, and it doesn't really help.
They've got a lot going for them coming out of the bye, though, with the offensive line finally healthy. They had their two best offensive linemen hadn't played in a couple of weeks. And I don't know what's going on with the running game. Watching that game before the bye, they only ran the ball to set up play action, which is not a way to run a Ravens offense.
Well, Flacco had a meltdown.
Well, Flacco is on pace to throw the second most pass attempts of any quarterback in NFL history over the course of a season. And from everything we know about Joe Flacco, he's streaky, he can get good, he can be effective, but that's not the game plan with Joe Flacco. Speaks to your point. I mean, when the idea was they were going to be a balanced offense, right now we don't know what kind of team they are, what they're mysterious to us, because that's what 7-9 or 9-7 or 8-8 teams look like week to week.
Every single one of their games is a one-score game this year. So they are the middle.
They'll be in
they
this
are
game.
A middle team. I could see this being in the 30s. You didn't like it when it was 10-6. I could see both of the – I don't think the Steelers' defense is very good.
They're the worst pass-rushing team in the NFL.
Steelers have the Jets, Dolphins, and Saints up. It's not too bad.
Jets already played the Steelers.
I have that information absolutely incorrect. Looked at the wrong team.
All right, moving on. The San Francisco 49ers stink. We all know it, but who's worse on the road than the Saints? Well, maybe the 49ers, but that's a different discussion. The Saints travel to the right big bell bottom.
Done. You do that so well that
that's
it's
a thing.
Concerning.
That's a thing. A 3-4 Saints team that has won 3 of 4 games after an 0-3 start. And, Greg, I would say the Saints, to me, of all the teams that we've forked, and I think we've forked around 5 teams at this point, maybe 6, they're the one that poses the greatest threat just because Drew Brees is involved.
Absolutely. I think they have a chance to make the playoffs. I think they'd probably fall short. 9-7 type of team, but you said they play poorly on the road. That's mostly true, but I think they stumbled into something in Kansas City when they really outplayed the Chiefs, and they changed their offense to this boring ball control, we're just going to hold the ball forever and keep our lousy defense off the field type of game, and I thought they played it well against.
Wait, what took so long to figure out this attack?
Well, you got explosive players. You want to use it. You're an offensive team. You want to go down the field. They limited the Seahawks to 13 offensive points, only 9 possessions, and they get Sheldon Rankins back this week. And they might get Delvin Bro back this week. That's two of their best defensive players. You got some things looking up for
them. If you're going to be a ball control offense, I would like to have seen the Mark Ingram from the last couple seasons. They don't have that right now. What, he fumbled last week, and then Sean Payton just ran with Tim Hightower, who did a good job. But where are we with Mark Ingram?
Ball control is 5-yard throws to Willie Snead and Michael Thomas.
The Niners have allowed a 100-yard rusher in 6 consecutive weeks, which is kind of hard to do. So I don't know who's going to be getting the ball, but you would think the Saints will be able to move it on the ground, whether it's Hightower or Ingram.
Well, on the flip side, the Saints have been ghastly against the run on defense. And it sounds like Carlos Hyde might not play in this game.
You know who looked good?
Sounds like he's back, I think.
You know, look good before the bye. DeJuan Harris, who is a Green Bay Packers practice squad castoff who ruptured his knee a couple of years ago, ran like a man possessed before the bye. I think he'll probably get the bulk of the workload because Chip Kelly came out and said he deserves more touches.
It's a game. Well, Saints should win.
Greg, to your point.
Puts them to 4-4. Their schedule in the second half is not too bad. They got a shot.
They're getting close to the Patriots for you, Greg.
No.
Your favorite team.
Oh, Greg loves the Saints.
Chargers,
I would say, are number 2 right now.
Hyde has a sprained AC joint. That's often not a 1-week injury. There's no guarantee he's going to be back in this lineup.
Back at practice.
You meet a girl and you're telling your friends and you're so excited about the relationship. You're still, after all these years, still kind of in that honeymoon phase whenever you talk.
You know why?
No, I was killing them last
It's unrequited. Greg loves the Saints more than the Saints love Greg. They never put a defense worth watching out there.
That's fair.
Or how about this look at it? 37-year-old man. When you think about the Saints, you think about being young. And you think about being a Tulane.
I couldn't have cared.
Unattached and single and going to the bars and hanging out with your boy Jeselnik and just feeling alive for the first time in your life. You know?
That's a good theory. I didn't care about the Saints last few years. This team is a lot more fun on offense to watch.
Mark,
Michael Thomas is the key.
Mark, at what age did you feel the most alive?
right now, right this moment.
I don't believe that.
Wes?
25.
That's something. I think in your mid-20s, there is a nice mix of,
no.
I'm not, I don't need to accomplish something necessarily today. I can fend off the expectations.
By then I was,
and I can go absolutely wild.
Going like 20. Mm. 20, 21 is perfect.
I'm going to clip this off and send it to your wives. When my first child was born, that's when I
just oh, felt
well, except that, Dan, nobody – I mean, I think that probably was a high watermark in your life.
This
but
is
the idea
rhythm
that,
of the night.
The idea that's when you felt most free, I'd be concerned about your parenting because that's when you should say, you know what, now
not free.
I'm going to
alive.
Embrace
– alive.
Well, I don't – I think that there is a part of you that feels alive when at the birth of your child, but in the context of the question that you asked,
part of you.
You are absolutely lying to us, and no one buys it.
All right. If that's – if what I'm saying is not true, you being a baseball fan – couldn't have, that's way less.
Oh, I'm way over the baseball fan thing. That was at the beginning of the show. I'm already – listen, we got 6 or 7 months till baseball again. It's fantastic.
I just love my kids.
Yeah.
You know? Love my kids. What can I got another one on the way.
It just sounds so genuine.
And I love my wife too. And that's where I draw my happiness from. Clip it off, Sid, all right? I'll give you my
wife. Clip it out of the show.
Let's move on and talk about the Carolina Panthers and Los Angeles Rams. This game is being played at the Coliseum. The Rams haven't been there in a while. In fact, I think they've only played two games so far this season. At home, this will be the third one. And the Panthers, you know, if they're going to get going, it's going to be right now, 2-5. You can't have a big win last week at Arizona and then crap the bed again. You got to step up, Wes. Do you think the Panthers are about – well, take flight. That would be a mixing of metaphors, but start galloping really fast, like through jungle.
Right.
I don't
and
think
then,
Panthers gallop.
Right.
But, you know,
they'd
running.
Basically they'd be running and they'd jump on top of that ram and they'd rip them to shreds.
You know what Panthers do? They
what?
Pounce.
Pounce.
Oh yeah, pounce. Are they ready to pounce consistently?
I like this matchup, and even with the Rams coming off a bye, I like this matchup. Panthers. I don't know if people know this, have the best run defense in the NFL. They average only 3.3 yards per carry allowed. Completely shut down the league's best running back last week, David Johnson. And now they get the running back with the lowest yards per carry in the NFL, and Todd Gurley. Mm. I don't know how the Rams are going to move the ball. Is Case Keenum good enough to pick on this Panthers secondary?
Case Keenum has 7 interceptions over his last 3 games. The question for me, we are hearing more and more about Jared Goff, And they're acting like we should be excited about this news. This would have been exciting in July, but
oh, we've moved on.
Well, no, but he's getting more and more first team reps. It's like, hey guys, we're really making progress with the number one pick in the draft. I have to wonder if this thing goes south early. Are we finally going to see Jared Goff on the field?
I think they're waiting till they feel like they're a little out of contention. 2 games under 500 might be that moment. So that would mean this is his last chance. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
So the translation is they don't view Goff, the number one pick in the draft, as a quarterback that could possibly keep them in contention.
Well, you would think they would play.
Not ready.
Yeah, you would think they would play him if that was the case. I don't like this matchup either for the Rams because I think this I'm willing to believe this Panthers team is different. You know, they came back from the bye. You said, can they take advantage of that secondary? Maybe that defense is going to play to their talent level the rest of the way. I know the secondary is not great overall, but it should be a good defense. They played like it last week, and they got Jonathan Stewart. God, having the time off for him really helped.
He looks good.
He looked like a totally new runner, making people miss, running people over. A lot of juice. And if you can run the ball on the Rams, you're going to win. And that's why.
You're going to.
What's happening?
Lock it up.
Wait, what's coming
up?
Over me right now?
You lock it up.
Where's the lock?
Oh, he's locking it up.
Really trying to sell it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Locking it up, huh?
I got locked up, just like I did in Orleans Parish Prison one night in 2000.
Humble brag.
Days. Dun,
humble brag got arrested.
When you truly felt – in that jail cell, is that when you truly felt the most alive?
No. I mean, I was worried about staying alive.
What was the charge?
And
be honest with us.
Prostitution.
Disturbing the peace.
Disturbing the peace.
What, like you just disturbed the peace a second ago with this lock it up war cry that came out of your mouth?
Hey.
What were you doing to disturb? I mean, you've got to tell us.
Yeah.
Well, I've told you before.
Well,
I
but
really
no, but that doesn't.
Do
this is a forum to tell many people.
I was on the outskirts of a big altercation, which I.
Greg, rolling up the sleeves and throwing haymakers.
Honestly, wasn't, you know, involved in. And, you know, they locked us up. They have to lock it up.
Good
anybody takes exception with me and Jeselnik, we're coming after you. See?
Did you throw a punch?
No.
Did you land? Where it was
no.
a punch
the,
landed
the
prob- on you?
The problem was I was carrying a guy who had been knocked out during this altercation. Not carrying, but we're walking.
I put him over my shoulder.
Like
see?
A large
we're
man.
Walking.
He was like Hemingway on the battlefield.
He's like 100. No, he's not a big guy. We're walking. His hands over my shoulder. Suddenly, I hear behind me the cop. Where do you think you're going? And it's like we hadn't got everyone else left.
So you were being a good Samaritan and you got arrested for it?
Well, as a friend, not so much a...
I like how Greg has painted this. He was in the middle of a massive bare-knuckle brawl. He saw a man down. He threw him over his shoulder like Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah, like Bubba.
Yeah.
I said I wasn't involved
Bubba.
At all. In the outskirts. All
right. I'm glad Mark delved into that one.
I like the Panthers again as well, and I think they're going to go on a run here. Is anybody else...
Yes.
Is anybody picking the Rams here?
No.
Okay.
Can't do it. Battle of the 85 Bears, Mark. Ron Rivera versus Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, that's true.
Cam Newton's had two awesome games in a row, too. Might be. Ready.
Oh, you're a little
Might
overboard
be ready to go,
on that.
Go on a run.
You're way overboard on that.
I mean, there's
Why?
Only three quarterbacks getting hit more
played,
than two.
He said he played like an MVP, and I watched the game, and I'm like, where's this MVP?
He played. He made four or five throws from the pocket under pressure on third and long to keep the ball moving. He ran the ball. He did the exact same thing he did last year.
Massive hyperbole from the
no.
boss.
And the – over under on ticky tack personal fouls in his favor is being set at 1.5 after his meeting with the commissioner. They NFL will want to send a message: we protect our stars. Flags are coming out for you know if a little breeze goes by his left ear hole, the laundry's coming out.
I hear you. I think he had a point last week, but I hear you. A little bit of you
independent of that.
Some makeup calls are coming, basically.
That's what I'm saying. Let's move on. The Indianapolis Colts stink. They're 3-5. Nobody likes them. Nobody likes watching them. And now they travel to Green Bay to face the Packers. And you know what, Mark? I know you're not the biggest Packers fan, but you're starting to see some things you like about this team, don't you? Aren't you?
I think there's something to like in the fact that Aaron Rodgers has put together two of the better games he's had over the last couple years, frankly. And it's I don't think it's a total mirage. They're getting different guys involved. You know, I tweeted this and someone was like acting like these guys aren't all-stars, but I like seeing the fact that young players like Trevor Davis, Geronimo Allen are in the game. Excuse me?
Geronimo Allison.
Yeah, it's like you're getting some of these younger guys in there. It's not the same cast of characters. Jordy Nelson, I thought, played one of his better games last week.
Yeah.
He looked like a different player. And their backfield situation is very strange, but there's reason to believe that Green Bay can make something of the second half of the season, and it couldn't come against a better defense to have it happen against an Indianapolis right
You
now.
Didn't even mention the Packers' best receiver, Davante Adams, who has a chance to go 12 receptions back-to-back-to-back, which I believe may have never been done in history.
Yeah, I don't think they have better players than the guys I mentioned, but those guys, it's like – it's not the same two or three people doing the same two or three things every game. There's a little bit more of a diversity to this offense
right
now.
I mean, they had to start figuring out some other options while Jordy Nelson – maybe now Jordy Nelson's getting back now to where he was, but he wasn't. Randall Cobb doesn't seem to be like the same guy he was a couple of years ago. So finally, and Devonta, him stepping up, that's huge for them.
100%.
The Colts at this point are a team that I just can't imagine winning against a – above average team on the road, period. Like, we think any given Sunday, well, that's true except for about four or five teams on the road. And I feel like the Colts are now that team. I would be stunned if they win this game, and the Packers aren't a great team. I just can't imagine the Colts at this point beating a good team.
I dare.
Is that crazy?
I dare I know they Philip beat the Dorsett Titans. To make a play in his career.
I mean, I know they beat the Titans.
Once a game.
Philip Dorsett, make a play in your career. You're being outplayed by Jack Doyle, an undrafted free agent, and you're a first-round pick when the Colts could have gotten a Blue Goose pass rusher or a Hog Molly on their offensive line. They draft Philip Dorsett. He drops balls. He drops punts. He doesn't make plays. That's why
woo!
My luck
woo!
Of the week.
Woo, woo, woo.
Yeah, he just locked it up.
Is that Dante Moncrief has a career game against the Packers. Dante Moncrief, career game. T.Y. Hilton has a hamstring injury. Philip Dorsett, I don't know what his problem is, but he just doesn't make
plays. This is a really long way of getting to you. What you just wested Phil Dorsett in a big spot.
And wow. by association, Ryan Grigson, who picked him.
I think you wested the Lock of the Week segment by now making it an individual accomplishment.
What do you mean now? I've been doing that all along.
Yeah, oh, Greg.
Okay. You can lock up whatever you want.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Greg, I've not locked up anything because it may have nothing to do with football when I get there.
Wow.
And as much as this offensive line gets grief for getting Andrew Luck killed, that's not all they're bad at.
No.
They lead the league since the beginning of last year, and most big plays called back because their offensive line continues to make penalties over and
That's
over.
A killer.
There was a huge touchdown to Dante Moncrief last week that got called back because Denzel Good is grabbing somebody by the ankle.
Well, they also have no pass rush. They're counting on Robert Mathis at 35 years old off of a serious injury to be their best pass rusher. That matchup against the Packers' offensive line is a joke. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to do whatever he wants, just sitting back there for 5 seconds every play.
Yeah, and only two teams in the league right now allowing a higher passer rating to opposing quarterbacks than the Colts.
Davis also questionable with a concussion, which would be harmful.
Add that to it. Every time we talk about the Colts, you know what? We could just in week one record our thoughts on the Colts and then just replay it week to week. Because it feels like we're just rehashing the same issues
Boring.
Over and over with this team.
Some character named Matthias Farley played 4 snaps for the Colts last week at safety. And on one of those snaps, Alex Smith stared down Jeremy Maclin for the whole route and still completed an easy touchdown over this character named Matthias Farley.
You just got wested, Matthias.
Yeah, got wested. Let's move on, gentlemen, and talk about the Tennessee Titans and San Diego Chargers. Tennessee traveling to San Diego. The Titans hanging around, 4-4. Marcus Mariota is making some plays now the last few weeks, which has done a lot, has done wonders for their offense, obviously. But now he's got a tough spot. The Chargers, who everyone's a fan of this team, despite their 3-5 record, they put up a fight up against anyone. And Greg, Joey Bosa is going to get his chance to go after Marcus Mariota, and that's a fun little battle.
It is, and it's strength on strength in terms of the guys up front, but the Chargers' injury woes are getting to a point where you think maybe it's just not going to happen. They lost Denzel Perriman and Jatavis Brown, most likely, for this game at linebacker, going up against the best rushing attack, one of the best rushing attacks in the NFL. That's a disaster. I mean, I think the matchup this week with the Titans, especially with the guys that are hurt at linebacker for San Diego, is trouble. I kind of like the Titans in this game.
Well,
look at you.
I give the Titans credit because they went in, as much as any team in the league, with a very specific verbalized idea of what they wanted to be. And it was not perfect out of the gate, but at this point you've got 7 straight 100-yard rushing games. They've scored 26-plus points in 4 straight games. And that Thursday night game, why was it boring? Because they absolutely pulverized the Jaguars. They absolutely dominated Jacksonville.
Wasn't boring if you're a Titans fan.
Well, exactly, but it wasn't competitive because you expect, oh, well, these two teams are figuring
themselves
out.
Wes was dancing in the aisles. We're here on Thursday nights, of course.
I missed that.
He took off his clothes in a very similar thing to what happened at the Super Bowl, or that's going to happen, ran up and down the aisles and just was like, I was right about Marcus Mariota.
None of this happened.
Oh.
That would be a heavy HR violation. Let's start
I think
there.
It would be, and it's a little disturbing. This is where Greg's mind went.
Yeah.
Dan's mind went there first.
No, Greg's went there first, and no one else went there.
Dan went with me naked punching Tom Brady.
Oh, okay.
Why can't I be clothed?
That's a different type of nudity.
Don't know why it's happening. It just keeps on happening in the show. By the way, my fantasy move to pick
motif.
Up Tony Romo and use all of my free agent budget and drop Marcus Mariota exactly 4 weeks ago continues to pay off in spades.
Best red zone quarterback in the league.
This is
what a move.
Regular Ryan Grigson over here.
I got grigged out on that one.
The well below 500 Chargers are the best team the Titans have played in 5 weeks, though.
Yeah, I don't feel confident in either team.
I didn't like the belly laugh there either, Greg.
What?
You know, taking joy in one of my biggest fantasy failures in personnel history.
I didn't know what the story was, and then as you were unfolding it, I'm thinking, wow, this is the worst possible thing that could have happened.
It's pretty bad. It's so bad that I'm not even upset about it anymore. It's just kind of a funny thing to remember.
It's a lost fantasy.
It's like the moment that Mariota went on fire.
It's like there's always 2017, Dan.
Exactly. You just at a certain point just turn the page. It's okay.
Travis Benjamin and Tyrell Williams are also sidelined Wednesday and Thursday at practice.
The biggest,
this is problematic.
Yeah,
the biggest Chargers backer in the national media feels bad about the Chargers' chances this week.
Next, yeah. Well, we'll see how it plays out. Next Tuesday, by the way, America goes to the polls to figure out you know, who they're going to vote for president.
Enjoy this as our last preview show before – you know, the Gestapo takes over or whatever, and it's all done. No more fun.
No, we're playing defense against the Gestapo.
We're all working towards the right vote on that one. But there is another vote on November 8th. Well, there's a lot. It's the general election. A lot of stuff
that's
to vote
right
on. But San Diego residents will have their opportunity to vote yes on C, which would fund a stadium that would allow them to stay in San Diego. I really hope they stay there. That would suck if they left because there is a nice fan base there.
A lot of populaces don't have the chance to say yes or no on this kind of thing. Sometimes teams just get pulled out and away from you. If they don't get this done,
I still doesn't feel good because
it's not going to happen by all accounts.
Oh, really?
And they got to get a 2/3 vote. And hey, newsflash, voters have woken up. We're not paying for stadiums
exactly
for billionaires.
And I get
I get it.
And then we also but the Chargers, they're a mom and pop organization. Well, you know what? Let's get some ownership and then they'll pony up money to build a stadium.
Do we really need two teams in Los Angeles? I can confirm that we do not.
And I love the ownership in San Diego, let me just state, Greg.
They are wonderful.
I love mom and pop.
They're wonderful.
I'm all for the little guy. But, you know,
You're pointing out some fiscal tension there. That's fair.
That's all. Let's move on.
A team named after credit cards.
Let's move. Is that true?
Yes.
Really?
Credit cards or credit card users?
Baron Hilton was the original owner of the San Diego Chargers, a credit card maven.
Mm. I thought that was a classic Wes pun for a second, but then I sniffed it out and I said, Wes is also a student of history. Maybe this is going somewhere and it's paid off well. Mm.
You read me so well, Dan.
Let's move on. Sunday night football. Oh, we got a good one here. The Denver Broncos 6-2. They head to Oakland against the 6-2 Raiders. How about that? AFC West supremacy on the line for Al Chris and the world. And here we go, Chris Wessling. I know just by your general comments that you haven't been completely sold on the Raiders here. Does that mean that you believe the Broncos are going to be 7-2 by the time they wake up Monday morning?
I would put it this way. You know, you would think that Greg would call this a fork in the road game. Mm. First place on the line, one team goes by itself in first place. The other team might fall behind the Chiefs. Big-time fork in the road game. You would think that's what it is, but it's not.
Yeah.
Locking it up?
No, it's a prove-it game.
Oh, prove it.
Yeah, I don't really think it's a fork in the road game.
It's a prove-it game for the Raiders. Are you legitimate? Can you beat the Super Bowl champions and the bullies, the end boss of the AFC West?
I like it.
Since John Elway's been in the chair, the Broncos defense, this is, if we say that the Browns defense against the Cowboys rushing attack is the most lopsided matchup, the best matchup of the week is a Raiders offensive line that allows the fewest sacks and the fewest quarterback hits against a Broncos pass rush that leads the league in sacks and quarterback hits. Mm. And in fact, has 19 more quarterback hits than any other team and more quarterback hits, at midseason than any team since 2000.
Wow.
They're pretty good, dog.
I give the edge to the Broncos in this matchup for that one.
There is one issue. It sounds like Aqib Talib is flying to California. James Palmer from NFL Network reported this to get his back looked at, and they're saying now that he may not play. That's an issue. You still got a lot of talent, but you're missing so much.
Lorenzo Doss played well in his place last week.
It's an issue, and yet this Broncos defense is so good that Talib wasn't there last week, and you wouldn't have known it. I mean, they gave Phillip Rivers more trouble than he's had all year, and you mentioned it. They just plug a Bradley Roby, a first-round pick, in to start.
Well, and they generate turnovers, and they score points on defense,
it's
they're going to need to keep doing that.
But you know what? They weren't facing Derek Carr last week, an ascendant superstar who could not be playing with more confidence right now. He just threw for 500 yards and 4 touchdowns without an interception, which has rarely happened in the history of the league. I wonder if, as good as the Broncos are, with the confidence playing in their building in prime time, that the Raiders are going to put some points on the board in this game. Would it be crazy?
It's fair to ask. I mean, Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, is this the best duo in the league right now?
Statistically, it is.
What a great matchup. I mean, it's a treat when the Broncos defense is going up against the Raiders offense, I wouldn't be surprised though if the Broncos win this game on the road. I mean, I don't think the Raiders are a great team right now. I think Derek Carr is playing really well. They're not a great team.
I don't think they would call themselves a great team. I think that they're very much a reflection of their coach right now. And, you know, for all these teams that don't want to take bold moves at the end of games, the Raiders are here because of that personality, which is admirable and enjoyable to watch. But they do have a lot of talented young players. And I think that this isn't a fluke record, but they have flaws.
I love that they're in primetime 3 of the next 5 weeks. Because I think they're a fun team.
And I feel like they haven't been a lot.
No, they haven't. They haven't had meaningful primetime games in the season.
They were a junk operation before last season.
I wouldn't be surprised if they run it pretty well. You would think their running game is somewhat of a weakness, and yet they're 6th in the league in yards per carry between DeAndre Washington and Rashard and Murray. They could run it on the Broncos.
Let's pick this game with the score, Mark.
Wow.
Broncos 24-21, overtime.
Broncos.
That would be 3 straight overtime games?
Why not? This is what the Raiders are.
Broncos 24-21 in regulation.
Wow.
Broncos 24-21 regulation.
Feeling a lot of pressure. Broncos 23-21 in overtime. A walk-off safety.
Wow.
Along this note, real quick, Sydney pointed out before the show, sight unseen, Wes and I descend our picks for every game for our NFL Network vehicle that we're on. And sight unseen, Wes and I picked every single game the same way.
The kissing cousins, ladies and gentlemen.
We're on the same way.
Raiders fans are not going to be happy that we just went 4 across on the Broncos when they have an offense that hasn't had 350 yards, I think, since week 3. Like, they have no running game, and Simeon's
Well, they haven't allowed a 300-yard passer in a long time.
You know what? I love the Raiders. You know, I backed them for Team of ATL, but ultimately, you know, it's going to be a tough game. I think the Broncos come out on top. We'll see how it plays out. Finally, Monday Night Football. Oh, yes, Monday Night Football. The Buffalo Bills, who, you know, they've come down to earth a little bit. It's been a roller coaster season for Rex, who was kind of in the tank at 0-2, then won 4 straight, but now have lost 2 in a row. Weren't very competitive against the Patriots, which maybe wasn't a very good sign, especially in their own building. And now they got to travel to Seattle. Does it just me or the Bills playing like monster teams every week this season? It has not been an easy schedule for them, but they got to figure out a way to get it done. And Greg, I guess it comes down to me. Who are the Seahawks at this stage, especially on offense?
They're working some things out. I thought they would be a lot better throwing the football than they are. I mean, it's amazing that Richardson and Lockett, who I thought would be a big part of their offense, I think have combined for about 300 yards between them. Lockett is essentially a fourth receiver for them. This is a tough matchup, too. I mean, the Bills aren't a great defense. They're not a shutdown defense. But at this point, if you're a Seahawks offense that scores 13 points – in the Superdome, it's like you can't count on scoring against anyone.
Yeah, I think that their philosophy has been Russell Wilson and Tom Cable can overcome our lack of investment in the offensive line. And what they weren't planning on was to have an injured Russell Wilson playing all year. And he's not the same quarterback when he can't move because his best asset is his elusiveness. That's completely taken off the board when he plays now.
Yeah, I mean, 19 quarterbacks in the league have more ground yardage than Wilson right now, and it's absolutely translated game to game. His escapability in past seasons, you know, they say he doesn't have a touchdown in 3 straight games. A lot of that has to do with where drives are ending and where they're finishing with Russell Wilson, because he used to create these opportunities and get into the red zone with his incredible, you know, ability on his feet, and they don't have that this season. They're limited, but I certainly do not give up on this offense yet because we've seen them redefine themselves. This, to me, is one of the most interesting games of the entire week, because Buffalo has won me back over in terms of being a team that, throw no matter what their schedule is, they seem to come in every week. They come in to play. LeSean McCoy is healthy, it sounds like, this week. The way they managed that was obviously a disaster. But if McCoy can be what he was a couple weeks ago, then this game is absolutely competitive.
You would think it's a defense first type of game. I mean, I can't see either one of these teams. Tyrod Taylor in their passing game is very limited. I mean, that's not
they don't
breaking any
it.
News. So to try to go against Seattle, even without Michael Bennett, who they missed, and Cam Chancellor, who they definitely miss, they still got players stepping up.
Oh, my God. Bobby Wagner's playing as well as he ever has. Earl Thomas looks like 2014 Earl Thomas. Cliff Avril is on fire.
Cliff Avril the last 2 weeks is, you know, the best defensive player in the league.
He's building whole neighborhoods in Haiti.
I feel and like Cliff Avril should have or the Lions should have re-signed Cliff Avril.
It's been a while.
Well,
yeah.
We wrote about 600 articles about that.
Yeah. KJ Wright is always the forgotten man, and he has made a couple plays where he stopped the tackle just short of first down, where they might be 2-4 if not for some KJ Wright plays.
I know that we don't like looking back over the years at certain compiled records, but I do think it's notable that under Pete Carroll, against some good competition, they are 9-1 in primetime games, that he prepares them
for
that. And you can't – Rex Ryan has had some real up-and-down affairs on Monday night and Sunday night football, so – that is advantage Seahawks.
I like to look back over compiled records from
you. Well, yeah. And when you do it, it's relevant. In some cases, we would say, don't go there.
I just want to say that that is not unanimous, and I thought it was important to let the public know. Some people like it. Some people don't.
When the Bills
– using the royal we there in a big spot, that's all.
When the Bills lose this game, I hope they don't make excuses and refuse to give credit like they did last week when Gronk kicked them up and down the field and they said he was a byproduct of Tom Brady, which is one of the most ridiculous sentiments I've ever heard a football player say.
And now you got Jimmy Graham.
You just got wasted.
Yeah, own up. I mean, this is the same franchise that when Rex Ryan loses to Deion Lewis, he tries to diminish Lewis as a player instead of giving credit.
Right, especially a cherished son of Buffalo, Rob Gronkowski, who had gone home stick it in the Bills' eyes.
Stick it in the ear.
Buffalo loves Rob Gronkowski.
Jesus, the eyes? Is he a psychopath?
He Rob's a little crazy.
All right. By the way, a reminder. We do have a presence on a new NFL Network program. It's called NFL Pick'em. And you could catch it three times on Saturday and early Sunday morning, 8:30 a.m. These are all Eastern times, 12:30 p.m. And then again, you get a little tipsy, you get a little banged up. And then you come home on your couch or in your bed with your lady or your gentleman. And then you watch the 1:30 a.m. show.
I mean, would this be a show that if you watched all three episodes, which would be exactly the same, that you would, you know, like a good movie, you'd see new elements, new things, new plot twists.
When you're in...
Oh, yeah. It's like the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but a television show.
When you're in bed at 1:30 in the morning on a Saturday, you definitely want some Dave Damashek in your life.
A lot of
10:30 Pacific, though. That's a nice time spot. And, you know, I'll be checking it out as I get into bed.
And for you people overseas, listen, you got wested. You got banged in a big spot here.
You know what, though? I think if you got NFL Game Pass. You can watch NFL Network live on it.
That's true.
So you can figure out, you know, you'd have to do some
or
some math with your time zones.
Or reorganize your entire family plan if you live overseas. Move them over somewhere in the States. Pick up your life at that point just simply to get this show, which may not even exist.
Got
at that
another
point,
example.
But you never know.
Get your VCR out of the attic. Have somebody hook it up for you over in the States. Record it. Overnight it overseas back to you.
Send the VCR tape.
Send the tape. Make sure you have a VCR.
I think people still have VCRs in their attic instead of throwing them away.
One note, down in Australia and those parts of the world, they use a different type of VCR tape, actually. So you'd need to get the American counterpart to buy all the equipment, which seems seamless.
I would say go on the internet for all that stuff. We might be working on some type of Periscope situation as well with the show. Just putting that out there.
Right?
Nothing's settled yet, but we want to make sure we get all
our
listeners involved. That's a scuttlebutt. Reading the tea leaves. There could be something happening.
Word around the campfire.
That's it for Thursday night's edition of the Around the NFL podcast. The next time you hear from us, it will be us recapping all the games we just previewed because that's how it works. That's how the wheel turns or spins round and round. That's how the Panther pounces. That's it. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the biggest baseball fan in the building.
Not true.
The mailman.
Never watched the game.
The boss. And La Cid behind the glass. Who did that ATN drop? I didn't like it. Till Sunday. just got West. Oh, you just got West.